Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The past isn't dead.
James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Sefin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
James Bond.
We both eradicate people to make the world a better place. I just want to be a little tidier.
Harder to tell the good from bad, villains from heroes these days.
What is it?
You don't know what this is. He's going to kill millions.
If we don't do this, there will be nothing left to save.
After several delays due to the pandemic, No Time to Die is opening in theaters on October 8th, with Daniel Craig back in his fifth and final outing as 007 in Ian's 25th Bond movie. Directed by Kari Joji Fukunaga, the film picks up the story just after the events in Spectre and was lensed on locations including Italy, Norway, Jamaica, and England, as well as on stages at Pinewood in London. To talk about the ambitious production, in this episode, our guest is cinematographer Lina Sandgren, who received an Oscar and BAFTA award for his work on Damien Chazelle's La La Land. His credits also include Gus Van Sant's Promised Land, David O. Russell's American Hustle and Joy, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris's Battle of the Sexes, and Damien Chazelle's First Man. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. Hi, Linus. Thanks for joining me and congratulations on No Time to Die.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
This was your first Bond film. Have you been a fan of the franchise and what was it like joining the project?
I am a fan and I've been a fan since I was a teenager, and I made my own, small films on Super 8 as a teenager, as many of us have done. But it was quite inspiring, the whole franchise for me as a kid growing up. I got into scuba diving and free diving thanks to the franchise, and different Bonds have affected you in different ways, I think, and then later on as a filmmaker or cinematographer, it's one of those projects that really something that is a big privilege to be part of. I think I always considered it being like the grandest of all kinds of challenges, as a cinematographer. So that was it was actually an unbelievable opportunity for me, I must say.
So this was the first time you worked with Kari Joji Fukunaga. When the two of you started talking, what was the visual language that you decided you wanted to achieve?
It was fun to talk to him. Initially, we had a conversation over Skype, and Kari called me, right? And we talked about it. And the common, what made me really happy was that Kari wanted to sort of look for the soul of Bond, the everything that Bond is. If you boil it down to the essence of what Bond stands for, he wanted to find that and use also the sort of charm and the charm in Bond that has been throughout all those films over time, and not be afraid of bringing in the romantic action that is like rich and colorful and slightly, you know, or maybe perhaps very much heightened, but still connected to reality. And obviously, Daniel Craig's Bond has added a lot of realism and more brutal type of action through his films, and brilliantly so, obviously, and created a great depth to the character. And yet it was important for us visually to sort of try to always add to it in the directions we were going. And Carrie very much wanted it to feel like it was a great ride. It should be a great ride. So the way he was involved in writing the script, he very much created a story so that we could, you know, go from one really cold location to one really warm location. And doing so also sort of visually with the color palettes and with the days and nights, try to vary it so much that you felt sort of the contrast in the story. And also obviously related to the story, but very much giving the audience as much, you know, rich escapism as possible on this journey. It was still important that it was like relocations, or we went to places that you actually can go to more or less, but it's in the same connection, like with the action, where Carrie didn't want to have anything, any action that wasn't possible to do in real life. Right. So all the stunts had to be sort of possible in the reality. Couldn't be anything that is not physically possible. So that sort of grounded us in reality with the relocations and sort of places you actually can go to. But we decided to go, when we go to icy locations, it would be like the iciest location, you know, or you go to a romantic Jamaica, then it's, you know, the sunsets, or it's a romantic, vibrant nights, and try to find color palettes that are contrasting so that you get a new scene. When you come to a new scene, you get a new visual effect, you know. Carrie talked to me a lot about that he wanted to give the audience, you know, like a great visual experience that's just as grand as possible. And part of that was also to shoot on film and to ideally shoot on large formats for sequences, which we also did. So the film has like both anamorphic 35 in there, but also IMAX 15 perf film cameras for certain sequences.
That's something I wanted to talk to you about, because you similarly used IMAX for certain sequences in First Man.
Right.
And you did that again. So do you want to elaborate on your choices of cameras and lenses and when you chose to use the different formats?
I found, you know, in our first discussions already that Carrie and I had very similar view on, you know, how to use cinematography in a film. And part of that is like that the format you shoot on very much affects how the audience sees the film. And we both felt that Bond movies for us felt like anamorphic 35 is like what the franchise lives in. It's like the wide scope of the screen that you and that you get lush colors shooting on film. That was sort of a no-brainer for us in the discussions, and we already connected on that early on. But Carrie also said that he wished that we could, you know, expand that even further. And so that's why we found these selected sequences where we shot on IMAX film, because of those sequences being very immersive. It's interesting when you sit in an IMAX theater and you're, the image, which is then as wide as you can see, also disappears below your feet and above your head when you're in the theater. That just comes with Carrie's sort of constant eager to maximize the film. I mean, it goes to sets as well. I mean, the sets were built to the walls on the stages, and he would still want the sets to be bigger and longer, or, you know, if he that's just in his nature for the vision of this film, was that we should do everything we can to just maximize. And so the reason for IMAX in this film has to do with just opening up the peripheral viewing for the audience and to see even more, be even more engulfed in the scenes, you know.
Well, like all the Bond films, the locations are such a part of the story. And this time you shot in Italy, Norway, Jamaica, England, and of course you used Pinewood for your stages. Let's talk about some of those. The opening of the film begins in Matera, Italy. Tell us about shooting that first chase sequence.
Yeah, so what's interesting with Matera's story, I think, is in the film is that you have both sort of an emotional story in there, but you also have this action sequence in there. And it's both a very romantic city, beautiful, like it looks almost like from 2,000 years ago, or there's no paint on the walls, right? It's just stone buildings and really, really romantic, I would say, perfect vacation trip for a loving couple. But
and we meet James with Madeleine Swann, and played by Léa Seydoux.
Yeah, so you meet them there on a romantic vacation. But so that's perfect, right, for that reason. But then obviously those walls of stone are quite hard to just the thought of you know, crashing your car or motorcycle into those stone walls, or having fights and hit your head to those stone walls or whatever. It's just really, really visceral. So I think that was the base of that location. And what is interesting there is that it has, it's quite beautiful all the time, but especially if it's sunny. So that was one of our challenges, to just find the moments of sunshine, you know, in these scenes. So in Matera, we had quite a bit to do in Matera with the stunt planning. And I think, I don't know exact details of how much time they spent down there, but we obviously have to lock down that whole town more or less in order to perform these stunts there, both the car stunts, but also the motorcycle stunts. And there were huge lockups already beforehand, just to, you know, rehearse stunts and to prepare for them. And I know that the motorcycle stuntman, he rehearsed a lot of, you know, all this stunt ahead of time on other locations, but then also built this ramp then on that, along this wall. So we had a second unit director, Alexander Witt, who went ahead of us to shoot wider shots of these stunts. And then we would come down and come in and shoot the shots with the actors. So that was all planned out ahead of time and rehearsed. And I'm not sure if we had like 6-7 cameras on that scene, and also a drone to shoot it. And I think it was amazing, you know, to be part of doing such grand stunts where you have the resources to actually do them on those kind of locations, where you have to ask the people who live there for permission and for grace to sort of take up their environment. But yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What was it like for you to plan the camera positions and the cinematography for some of those shots? Because it looked like the streets were all very, very narrow.
Yeah, so we did a lot of testing, and we put IMAX cameras on motorcycles. And it was, you know, moments in, and we know this from making films in general, it's usually when you reach the point in prep, and when you reach the, you know, testing in prep where you feel like you hit a limit of what you can do, you just need to think a little more and try to see if there is finds to where we can invent solutions, maybe by compromising something else, or maybe if we tried from the other angle. Because it's easy that you have sort of your knowledge, and the knowledge can sometimes be restricting you. You would think like right away that an IMAX camera that weighs like 80 pounds could not be on a dirt bike, on the back of a dirt bike, but actually it actually can, it turned out. And so, yeah, we put cameras on in positions on motorcycles and to go through those narrow alleys. And also Chris Corbett, the special effects supervisor, he built those this car, right? The DB5, he built that from scratch with Aston Martin doing the body. But the chassis of those cars he built, and he made it possible for the actors to also, you know, both drive them. Some stunts was done by Daniel himself, but also a stunt driver would drive the car from a pod on top of the vehicle, you know, so we could shoot the actors' dialogue scenes inside the cars. And incredible, you know, technology that was prepared like 6-7 months ahead of time, you know. But it was very fun to be in Matera to shoot there, just because it was hard, and it was hard to get up and down those hills, because it's a very, you know, steep hills. And we had to, even like a normal walk and talk scene there would be tricky, having to try to, we wanted to do it, you know, a camera shot going up a staircase, and it was very complicated to get that going, because you can't even get a crane to the position. And yeah, but anyway, it was lots of fun challenges in that town because of the location.
Now, reflecting the range in this film, you also have that action sequence that's a really intense sequence that's filmed underwater. Tell us about where and how that sequence was filmed.
That was very close to my heart, that scene, because I myself was very inspired by the underwater scenes in the Bond movies, and got me into, you know, free diving and scuba diving eventually. So our production designer, Martillis Lee, who built, you know, many of those, almost all these scenes have, you know, been designed. They're not just like they look, but they're designed or built. So a lot of the scenes are actually set builds in the film. And including this one, the underwater scene where he built this interior ship machine room on stage with the help of Chris Corbold, building a giant rotisserie rig that sort of had this set inside of it. And it was built in pine wood on the underwater stage. So it was like four pillars with, you know, a hydraulic rig that could descend this set into the water and rotate it upside down, if you will, or and tilt it up and down. So it could all submerge, and it was outfitted with a lot of escape routes for the crew. But we were in there with, underwater cameras, and we had this idea that it would be visually quite interesting, since boats usually they go on like 12 volt sort of power, perhaps, or 24, I don't know, whatever. But they had this tube lights in there that we felt it would be interesting once it's filled with water, that set, that those lights don't just black out, but they like start to blink or and so that it becomes a little more interesting. And so we created, we built these lights to be underwater fitted with, so they worked underwater, those LED lights, and they were just outfitted so they looked like fluorescent tubes. But that scene was like actually built and planned for earlier in June or something like this. But then Daniel Craig wasn't able to shoot with us for a little bit in the beginning of the movie, so we had to actually take that whole set out again from the underwater tank in order to do other scenes in the underwater tank, and then put it back in. So that was quite a process, but it was an incredible set, very intricate. So lots of those solutions, you know, where you combine mechanical special effects, and that was part also of the whole filming, where Carrie, just like myself, really loved to capture everything in camera as much as possible. And that's obviously a lot of the theme on the Bond movies, to actually do the stunts for real and do what you see actually happens in front of the camera. And this was part of it, you know. It's a huge effort from production to put in that in front of the camera in the budget that we got to build all these beautiful sets, you know.
Linus, tell us about the set for Safin's compound that we see in the end.
Right, so that set for Safin's compound is quite remarkable. It's like Mark Tillisley, the production designer, designed all of that and built all of that at Pinewood on like three or four stages. And one part of it, which is an exterior, is actually built on stage inside. And Mark Tillisdad built that all the way to the walls to maximize it, of course. And we, you know, we had to lit a big overhead skylight with, I think it was something like 700 sky panels and a big soft sun sunlight to create a realistic sunset light. Because all of that, that sequence was sort of lit in a little later light, as a late afternoon light. And part of it was interiors that had to be built outdoors because they were so big they didn't fit on stage. So we had to build them outdoors at Pinewood in the back lot. And I think in total we had 10 stages or something plus the back lot where we built that, the Cuba Streets exteriors, which is basically three streets that are connected with two-story buildings and interior exterior sets, which we built already early on as well in production and had to keep till the end of production in order to shoot it in September, October for Daniel Craig's part of that story. So,
and you used a lot of long takes.
Yes, we always thought about how to tell this story in an interesting way. And I think oftentimes with the long takes in this case had to do with to try to get the audience to feel what James Bond was feeling, you know. And we also did decide to change from handheld to crane moves, where crane moves would be when James Bond is more in control, while handheld would be when we should feel that this may not go the right direction, you know. And so a lot of the handheld was in these sequences when he goes through heavy battle scenes, and some of those we did as very long single takes, right? And also other sort of dolly moves or so would be rather told in general. I think Kerry likes also to tell the story with the camera and not like always edit too much. So if it's possible to go from a wide shot to a close-up of something and make it feel like a cut, but it's instead it's just a pan to something or a push in on something, then that would be, you know, sometimes more interesting, I think. And but the long takes has to do with obviously to make the audience feel more inside of the action, you know.
This was your first time working with Daniel Craig. What was he like to work with?
Oh, Daniel is such a collaborator, you know. He's obviously very a great dramatic actor, but also very involved and cared a lot about the story, but also about the visuals. And he was very great. He was just very great to work with, fantastic to work with.
Would you like to tell us a bit about shooting in Norway for the opening sequence, which is a flashback, and you include the setting on an icy lake?
Norway, we scouted in December, and we found that location when it was extremely frosty and foggy, frosty and overcast, and was very cold before Christmas, and it was beautiful. And we decided to shoot there and build this house. And once we came back to shoot there, it started to get warmer, and I thought that you know, the worst that can happen is that it's sunny, or that is windy, or both, because then we cannot get the look we're after, which is, you know, cloudy, overcast, and cold. And we could always manipulate it. If it's not windy, we could add fog machines and create fog, you know, or there's ways to get around weather. But weather is kind of challenging. I must say that was sort of our greatest challenge on the film, was to find the look we were aiming for without, you know, when there's one thing we cannot change, and that's the weather. And over there we had those challenges where it started to melt, you know, the sets were surrounded by ice, and we had planned to have, you know, equipment out there, and we were challenged by the weather. But we were also lucky to, you know, get moments in the late afternoons into the dusks where the clouds came in and we could shoot these exterior shots, and we had to sort of scramble a little bit in Norway to get all of that to work. But it's always interesting, you know, that we're as prepared we can be and as professional everyone is on the crew, and there's very technically tricky things we've been doing, you still are sort of in the hands of the weather. So
the film was shot before the pandemic. How does it feel for you knowing that it's finally coming out and people are going to be seeing it in the theater?
I'm so happy that it's possible now to actually go to the movie theaters again. And I obviously think that films should be seen in movie theaters in general. And this one in particular is really great to see on a large screen. That's at least our goal with the film, was to do it for the large screen. And it's also for the sound, you know, like this is just... The sound and image is really the best in the movie theaters, I think. No, so I'm really happy for it to come out now. It's going to be exciting to see what people think.
Before we wrap, would you like to give a shout out to your crew?
Oh, definitely. It was amazing too. It was the greatest experience. I love working for Barbara and Michael. The producers were so caretaking, and Carrie was such a great, inspiring collaborator, and yeah, everyone in the crew was amazing, and my camera crew obviously very strong. We, you know, the IMAX cameras are very heavy, and initially we shot we didn't really dare to get them on the shoulders, but eventually we shot, it was so easy, we just shot on the shoulders with these very heavy cameras, and they were very strong and inspired as well of doing the film, you know, so everyone did their best.
Congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Caroline.